Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Beyond the Book. It's Friday, April 3rd, 2020. Every week we check in with Publishers Weekly for the latest news on books and reading. Today, Andrew Albanese, PW Senior Writer, joins me from his home office in New York City. Welcome to the program, Andrew.
Hey there, Chris.
So before the coronavirus pandemic, Andrew, Friday was a special day, and not only because we do this podcast every Friday. Under a global shutdown, though, each day feels like all the others. So happy Blur's Day, all right?
And to you as well.
All right. So this week, we're starting to see the toll that COVID-19 is taking on the nation's economy and on the publishing world. But before we get to that news, how are you?
Yeah, you know, it's been quite a week, and we'll talk about some of the developments in the publishing world and the wider world and in the nation's economy, where we saw today, or this week, I should say, a record number of jobless claims, over 6.6 million. And I saw some estimates that suggest that once we fix all the system crashes and everyone who actually tried to make a jobless claim gets to make one, there will be over 10 million, which is astonishing. Never happened in our nation's history before, but this is an unprecedented crisis. But before we get to all that, yes, I'm okay. My family is okay. And thank you for asking. We are all healthy. Our mental health is hanging in there too. Today is 20 days here in captivity, shall we say, in New York City. And we're doing our best. You know, we're getting the kids through their digital school days. We're getting our work done. Once again, I'd like to shout out the New York City public school teachers for their efforts. But what can I say? It's heavy. You know, I'm not just talking about my weight over these last 20 days. It's emotionally difficult to endure. But we're keeping up our spirits by taking socially distanced walks in the park. We're constantly telling ourselves that what we're doing is saving lives. And at 7 p.m. every night, when the medical shifts change over here in the city, all of us cheer out of our windows here in New York City and shout messages of encouragement and love to our neighborhood. And I get chills every time we do it. I really do. It's quite meaningful. It seems to get louder every night. And so I just like to take this opportunity as well to thank the medical profession. But I also want to thank the store clerks and the delivery people and all the other people who are working so hard, who often work for minimum wage here in the city, who are now risking their lives. They're on the front lines doing the ordinary things that we need to do to live every day. And I just think they're extraordinary. And I hope they all get back pay, combat pay when this is all over. And I hope, of course, that they stay safe. Here in New York, I'm not going to lie, it's bad. Everything you hear in the news, well, it's true. It's that bad. It's that scary right now. More than a quarter of our emergency service personnel are out sick. So not only are we afraid of getting COVID, are we afraid of getting this coronavirus, you don't want to have an accident or appendicitis or another sudden affliction these days either. Our health system is at that point of being overwhelmed, and the next few weeks are going to be a real tightrope act. But we are staying positive. And my friend, how are you?
Well, I'm doing just fine. Thanks for asking. Trying my best to stay out of trouble. Andrew, you and I appreciate how lucky we are to be on the job, though staff at many publishers have been furloughed, and at Barnes & Noble, the book buyers were laid off this week.
Yeah, we really are lucky that we have been able to stay on the job, and we're going to hopefully continue to do our work as long as we can. But yeah, the publishing world really has been hit hard, the bookselling world as well. You know, we had a glimmer of hope a week before when print unit sales, you know, they sort of were holding flat, but they took a real tumble last week, down 9%. And as you say, it's a bleak sign for already beleaguered booksellers. Booksellers are scuffling. They are really fighting to get by right now. And you can read all about the latest developments in the bookselling and publishing world on the PW website. I'll just go ahead and say the news is grim. Grim news, of course, this week for Barnes & Noble as well, which has now temporarily closed more than 500 stores across the nation and furloughed what a spokesperson told us was a large number of employees at its headquarters. The furloughs occurred across all departments, the spokesperson explained, with an aim to maintain all functions, but at an understandably reduced level. And more bad news, too, for booksellers, the ABA's Children's Institute, which has become a really popular show over the years, has been canceled. That was scheduled for June. That is now not happening. As you can expect, that was very much expected, I think. But decision has now been made that that is not going to go forward. So that's sad, a sad note as well. And again, I'll just say you can check the PW site where we are maintaining a bunch of lists for all the latest COVID-related cancellations and changes, et cetera. So do check the PW site for that.
Well, sobering news indeed, Andrew. On a different issue, 10 days ago on March 24th, the Internet Archive announced the launch of its National Emergency Library, which is making digital scans of 1.4 million volumes in the IA's Open Library Initiative available for unlimited borrowing during the COVID-19 outbreak. Authors and publishers have since come out swinging against the move, calling it blatant copyright infringement.
Yeah, it's, you know, so a little background. I think, you know, for most people who've been listening to us probably know some of the details of this by now. It's been quite prominent in the news for the last few days. But the Open Library is this long-running initiative of Brewster Kahle and the Internet Archive, which operates on a concept called controlled digital lending. And we call it CDL for short. So under CDL, a library or a nonprofit like the Open Library, like the Internet Archive, will scan a copy of a print book that they've legally acquired. Either they bought it themselves or somebody from a library has weeded it from their shelves and sent it over to the Internet Archive. The library or the Internet Archive then makes that scan available to be borrowed in lieu of the print book. And they do this using a DRM-protected one-user, one-copy model, just like a normal ebook. And crucially, they take the corresponding print book out of circulation. And I think this is a point that's been missed in a lot of the coverage on this. When you're borrowing the ebook under controlled digital lending, you can't use the print book. The Internet Archive is now, however, doing uncontrolled digital lending. They have decided that during this COVID-19 crisis, they are going to allow those ebooks to be used by multiple users. And they said they're going to do this until June 30th or whenever the crisis is over, whichever is later. And as the Internet Archive concedes, not controlled digital lending anymore. This is something else entirely. This is sort of letting everybody read all of the ebooks in their site. And I don't know what you call it. Now, initially, the announcement did get some good press, right? You know, but then the authors groups weighed in, and individual authors and publishers have really been weighing in on Twitter as well. And it's just been an onslaught. The Association of American Publishers accused the Internet Archive of an opportunistic attack. Those are their words, the AP's words, on the rights of authors and publishers. The Authors Guild called the Internet Archive, the Open Library, a pirate site. But, you know, you can take those statements for what they are, right, from industry associations. To me, it was the reactions of indie publishers and individual authors that really tell the tale of how people are feeling about this.
All right, then. So tell us, what tale are they telling those folks?
Well, they're angry. You know, and I spoke to a number of publishers and authors and other stakeholders this week, and, you know, I have to be honest, they aren't all that concerned that the Open Library is actually in itself a real commercial threat to them, right? It's been around for about a decade. Now, some will, you know, adhere to the Authors Guild and the AAP lines and say that these copies on the Open Library site are stealing sales, but no one's really cared up until now. They really aren't stealing sales because these are, if you've been to the Open Library, and I would encourage people to actually take a look at it, these are really crappy scans. They're not ebooks. They are pictures of print books. And the vast majority of the collection are 20th century books that aren't selling or are out of print or impossible to read on a phone. You know, I can honestly say, and we've talked a bit about this in the past, anyone who is accessing an Open Library book is probably doing so as a last resort, right? You know, because they would never buy the book otherwise. That's why I feel like this is not a real commercial competition. And, you know, despite the protest that he made on Twitter, the great author Colson Whitehead is probably not losing any sales at all to the Internet Archive scans of his books. Definitely not now, because the Internet Archive has apparently taken them down at his request. But we're still talking about rights. We're still talking about copyright, and we're still talking about security online. And that's the foundation of the book business and many other businesses. And the fact that the Internet Archive has now done this requires engagement. It requires an effort to protect and to monitor and to see what's going on. And as one publisher, one university press publisher, I should point out, told me this week, this is the last damn thing anybody wants to deal with right now, right? We're trying to keep the lights on. We're trying to survive a pandemic here, as publisher added. And now there's this sense that the genie is out of the bottle here too. It's just a huge provocation and a time suck, so authors and publishers say, and really unwelcome for worry and authors, for authors and publishers, many of whom are already looking to give away their content during this time. You know, it seems like there was a way to do a partnership here, but that didn't happen. So, you know, publishers and authors are just, you know, they're really not happy about all this.
And has the Internet Archive offered any kind of legal excuse for what it's doing?
You know, not a credible one. They have, you know, in an FAQ on the Internet Archive released this week, there was a response to the outcry, but it wasn't very targeted, shall we say. You know, they cited fair use and a white paper on controlled digital lending. But as we've already said, this is not controlled digital lending. And, you know, yes, we're in an extraordinary period right now, right? Schools are closed. Libraries are closed. There's millions of library books that can't be accessed on library shelves. Which is not to say they're not available elsewhere or through something else. I understand the impetus behind what the Internet Archive wants to do, but not a single lawyer, not a single observer that I've spoken to yet has suggested to me that a group, even a group like the Internet Archive, which is a nonprofit, could just go ahead and grant itself a copyright holiday because of a national crisis. And I think that's frankly obvious, right? Even if you accept that Brewster and the Internet Archive have good intentions, and I should point out that not everyone does. In fact, a lot of people here think that there's an ulterior motive going on here. I don't know that that's true. I don't think that that's true. But on the legal side, here's another key point I'd make too. The AAP and the Authors Guild also believe that the whole concept of controlled digital lending is illegal. And we spoke about that last year on this show when these groups issued, you know, scathing releases about the practice. And there was some wondering as to whether or not there'd be a lawsuit about controlled digital lending. Now, this is the multiple user thing that the Internet Archive is now doing. That's just one more detail for these groups who don't think that, you know, anyone should be able to scan their books and lend them anyway. But I think the reason why we're not going to see a lawsuit is because I think the commercial impact of the Internet Archive is minimal here. There is a principle here, absolutely. But if this goes to court, I don't know. What do you think? Maybe 50-50 that a judge finds that, you know, maybe, or even maybe just suggests that the Internet Archive's controlled digital lending regime is legal. Even if it finds that the Internet Archive's, you know, the National Emergency Library, this Robin Hood Act they're doing is illegal, which I think probably a court would. I'm not sure that anyone wants to risk having a bigger, broader fair use ruling through this case. Ars Technica made that point in an article this week, and I wrote about it last year. I don't think this is a legal fight anyone wants because the case on its face is a slam dunk, right? You just can't start giving out multiple user copies of ebooks to people. Whether you agree with the underlying reason for it or not, there's no legal basis for that. But the thornier question facing publishers and libraries over whether they can scan and lend books, I think is an issue that nobody really wants to take up at this point.
Now, you've spoken to Brewster Keel this week, and you've been writing about his work since the early 2000s. What do you think is going on here?
Honestly, speaking personally, I don't know what to believe because, you know, I've known Brewster for 17 years or so. And in our conversation, I've never known him to be, I don't want to say clueless, but he sounded like he didn't understand what he's done here. And the more I reflect on the call with Brewster, the more I wonder if that was some kind of an act, because I was reading back everything that I've done, going back to the Open Content Alliance in 2005 and multiple interviews, which you can also read on the PW site. And what I heard from him this week just did not square. You know, basically Brewster concedes that, you know, they don't do PR at the Archive, right? They don't have a public relations specialist. They just kind of threw this out there and made their own release. Maybe that was a problem. But this is not just a PR thing, right? You can't just announce that you're taking the controls off a digital archive that you've created on untested legal grounds, even if you believe they're strong. They are untested. In fact, I'll go a step further and say they're contested legal grounds. I'm having a hard time believing that Brewster did not understand what he was provoking. Now, Brewster did admit that he knew that the Authors Guild and the AAP, for example, were going to go nuts over this. But he claims not to understand the reaction from authors and indie presses. He's even getting death threats, he told me. The ferociousness of the reaction seems to really have taken him by surprise. But again, I'm having a hard time believing that no one at the Internet Archive could not have foreseen a strong reaction to this. Now, I'll say this too, Brewster, there was no discussion of revoking the National Emergency Library at this point. Rather, the archive is just going to work through the takedowns, Brewster says, which, you know, is in the hundreds so far. And publishers tell me this is a pain in the butt for them. This is the last thing with limited staff trying to stay afloat they want to be doing, is sending ISBNs to the Internet Archive to have them go in and take their books down one by one. But, you know, here's the upshot for me. This is my bottom line. I'm speaking only for myself. I can't help but think that this is what we get. This is what we get for such having such dramatic polls in our copyright debate. You have the Association of American Publishers and the Authors Guild and this maximalism on one side, and you have open culture on the other side. And the fact is, most authors and indies, we're in the middle here, right? And Congress is missing in action. You know, what we really need is a policy, a national policy. We need a Book Modernization Act like the Music Modernization Act, a copyright bill that makes no one happy but makes everyone invested. And instead, here we are. We're probably going to get a lawsuit over a scanning initiative that's, you know, a bootstrap operation that's more resembles a digitized dumpster than a library, right? A lot of these books are discards that are in there. I mean, there's a lot of important stuff in there as well, but a lot of these things are just, they're books that libraries couldn't keep and are not available. There are no commercial ebooks available because nobody wants to make money off them. And once again, I feel like we're going to be in a position of asking the courts to make actual copyright policy again, rather than interpreting the law. You know, honestly, that's my upshot. It's been 16 years since Google started scanning books. It's been almost 13 years since the Kindle and the iPhone. We are in a full-on streaming world, as anyone who's been stuck home during this coronavirus crisis knows all too well. And look at the fights we're still having. I mean, shame on us. We need to do better. It's 2020. We need a real legislative effort. We need to address the digital age for books, and I think we need to do it sooner rather than later.
Well, perhaps, but not as much as New York City needs those ventilators, Andrew.
Amen to that.
Andrew Albanese, PW Senior Writer, thanks for joining me today on CCC's Beyond the Book.
My pleasure, as always.
Up next on Beyond the Book, the spread of the coronavirus around the world is viral in the common medical sense of the term. A parallel pandemic has simultaneously erupted too, a virtual viral infodemic of misinformation. Anita Makri writes from London on science and global development and has covered previous health emergencies, including the 2014 Ebola epidemic in West Africa. Lessons learned then, she says, can help to dispel rumors and myths about COVID-19. To battle misinformation successfully, says Makri, we must try to understand it.
There is a long tradition, I guess, in science and even in science journalism that there is a sort of impulse to correct. There's an impulse to say, no, we have the right answer because we've done the research. But I think more and more we are realizing that sometimes that impulse isn't entirely correct, that there is also value in actually trying to understand why people hold the views that they do.
What the coronavirus infodemic can teach us, next on Beyond the Book. Beyond the Book is produced by Copyright Clearance Center. Our co-producer and recording engineer is Jeremy Brisky of Burrist Marketing. Subscribe to the program wherever you go for podcasts and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. The complete Beyond the Book podcast archive is available at beyondthebook.com. I'm Christopher Keneally. Thanks for listening, and join us again soon on CCC's Beyond the Book.